This presentation is a production of AJE3 Entertainment. Audio imagery. Storytelling reimagined.
Rebel.
Jace Webster, 29, a resourceful young man with only one goal: enjoying the good life. His quest to accomplish this goal is one of inventiveness and manipulation. Our first sighting of our leading man comes on a busy afternoon in Beverly Hills. A physically toned, handsome black man riding in the back of a shiny limo. We see the back of Eddie, his driver's head, ever attentive to Chase's needs. Chase is wearing aviator sunglasses and is expertly dressed. He has the look of success. The limo stops at the intersection of Wilshire and Rodale Drive. A striking young lady in a customized convertible BMW pulls alongside. Chase motors down his window and extends a greeting. The young lady surprisingly returns the pleasantry. Realizing the light's about to change, Chase hurriedly asks for a date. She offers an enticing challenge. If you can catch me. She guns the BMW, runs the red light, and off down Wilshire. It's on. Chase shouts with anticipation for Eddie to hit it. They take off through the red light, and bam! They slam into the side of a Rolls Royce coming through the intersection. The 5'5" driver gets out and quickly walks towards the limo. He's loud and he's angry. Eddie, at 6'4", with a bodybuilder's muscular frame and piercing blue eyes, slowly gets out of the limo. The driver thinks twice about a fight. Chase is unconcerned about all the activity. He notices an attractive blonde walking on the sidewalk, and he waves. Eddie can't believe Chase's indifference about the accident. He returns to the car, opens the rear passenger door. Get out. I've just trashed my boss's car because of you. No more free rides, Chase. We're done. Chase and Eddie, they've been friends since childhood. Chase, the classic taker, and Eddie, the loyal and trusting sidekick. Eddie is always there for Chase. Chase, on the other hand, doesn't have a clue what real friendship is. He could care less about any problems Eddie will have explaining this accident to his boss. The loud and rather embarrassing exchange between them is being listened to attentively by a fashionably dressed, mysterious young woman. She walks to Chase sitting on the pavement and offers a helping hand. May I be of assistance? Her beautiful tan and exotic face and charming accent overwhelm him. Chase pretends injury and asks for a ride to the hospital. Or maybe a ride home? As they walk to her car, they exchange introductions. Her name is Ava Martinique. Chase provides directions and Ava tells him her story. She moved to LA a month ago with her father. It's an easy conversation that begs for a longer chat. They stop in front of a sandwich shop owned by Chase's father. As expected, Chase asks her if he can see her again. Ava smiles and tells him to hold up his phone. He does. They bump phones. She looks to make sure she has his digits. Chase notices a sticker on the back of her phone. Club Rendezvous. Ava tells them that if they do meet again, it will be her choice. She guns the engine, and she's off into the night. Watching through the shop window is Neville, a 50-year-old cook who's a veteran of the Iraq War. Neville and Chase frequently have pointed conversations about life. Neville recognizes Chase for what he is. No matter how much Chase tries to fool his father and Eddie about his intent, he's a small-time hustler with no future. It's a painful discussion for Chase every time they have it. Chase comes inside. Neville comments on the improvement in the quality of the company he's keeping. He issues a challenge. Ava is obviously loaded. And this is the age of enlightenment. Being supported by your wife is perfectly acceptable. Chase should either make a move or start ordering his aprons personalized and in large quantities. Chase exchanges a look with his father, George, 60, black, ex-military. He's serving customers, and his only words to Chase are, "You're late." Flashback. Sandwich shop on a busy day. Chase's mother, Harriet, is serving customers. She's Latin, with a soft face and eyes that warm the heart. She was 10 years younger than Chase's father and wanted a more carefree life than working in the shop. She put those dreams aside and supported his father's dreams of owning the shop as a family business. 2 days have gone by since he met Ava, and he hasn't received a call. It's Saturday night. He needs to get his mind off her. He convinces Eddie that the whole mess with the limo accident was actually Eddie's fault. To make it up to him, he should sneak another limo so they can cruise. As they make their way across town, they pass Club Rendezvous. They stop. After an aggressive exchange at the door between Eddie and the bouncer, they are let in. They give the club the walk around and settle at a table near the stage. The band begins their set. Lights dim. The spotlight hits the featured singer, Ava. She soon notices Chase and begins to direct her songs towards him. At the end of her set, she comes to his table. What happened to the phone call? Ava tells him that he must learn patience. A reward of riches are on the side of those who matches this skill. Chase doubts how serious she is. She leans over and gives him a smoldering kiss. At the end of the evening, Ava offers to take Chase to her home in the hills. Chase abandons Eddie without even so much as a thanks for the ride and the drinks. Ava's home is a magnificent estate, even by Hollywood standards. Chase is impressed by her obvious wealth. While she changes, he mixes drinks at the bar in the study. It's a room decorated with souvenirs of war. Weapons of combat from wars fought over the centuries adorn the walls and cabinets. Handguns, muskets, rifles, automatic weapons, even a bazooka. The room has the look of an arsenal. As Chase continues to examine the weapons, Ava returns and explains that the collection belongs to her father. He's away on business. She pulls an automatic weapon and offers to take him to the firing range in the basement. Chase confesses that he's never fired an automatic weapon designed to kill people, and he doesn't want to start now. She respects his feelings and says it would be nice if everywhere in the world weapons were not needed. She gives Chase a miniature Derringer with a knife concealed in the handle as a gift. They turn their attention to the drinks. Chase holds her close and tries to convince her they should take a trip together to Cardiona and put our bodies together like this on a sandy beach. She subtly reminds him that they're alone in the house. There are other interesting rooms for adventure. Chase guzzles his drink. He moves in for a kiss. He suddenly begins to feel the room spinning. He blacks out. Chase wakes. He's in the back seat of Eddie's limo. Eddie tells him that Ava called and asked if he would drive Chase home. He's doing this for her, not for him. The next day, Chase and his father have one of their repeated arguments about Chase showing up whenever he wants to for work. Chase's father is a hard-working, decent guy who finds it difficult to understand Chase's idea of work. Chase has used best friends, even relatives, in his scheme to build his elusive empire. To quiet his father, Chase tells him he's getting a job that will last for a long time. When pressed, he reveals the job he's after, becoming Ava's husband. Living off someone else is not what Chase's father had in mind. Getting married should be for love, not money. Chase unleashes unexpected anger, almost rage, telling his father that his mother died because of this so-called love. Chase's anger continues to boil as he reveals for the first time he blames his father for his mother's death. Flashback. It's night. Closing time. Harriet and a 15-year-old Chase clean the front of the store. George is counting the day's receipts in the back. Two hooded men come into the store. She calls for George. They demand that Harriet open the register. It's empty. They're pissed. As George runs to the front, the men fire their guns as they run out of the store. Chase tries to protect her, but Harriet's hit. She falls. Joyce grabs her and caresses her. Chase watches as his mother dies in his father's arms. Present day. Chase and his father's argument turns to harsh words, almost physical. Noah gets both of them to cool down. Chase makes an on-the-spot decision. I quit. In love or not, marrying Ava is money. I'll never ever have to set my foot in this shop again. Chase calls Ava. He wants to come see her. She hesitates. Her conversation is overheard by her father, Eladio Martinique, an elegant 60-year-old Central American. He tells her, now is the perfect time. Say yes. When Chase arrives at Ava's, he's greeted by Eladio. He tells them Ava had to leave for the club. Chase realizes this is the perfect time to impress his future father-in-law. They share a scotch, and a well-traveled Martinique talks about his job as a diplomat. In the middle of their conversation, Chase's well-planned future turns into a nightmare. Four masked men storm the estate. They break into the study, guns blazing. Chase is knocked unconscious. When he wakes, he finds the study shredded by gunfire. Martinique is covered in blood. Dazed and frightened, he panics. Ava. He hurries to his car. And he leaves the estate. Chase frantically drives across town. He's wired and he's nervous. Flashback. His romantic kiss with Ava and her smiles. He arrives at the club. He asks the bouncer about Ava. The bouncer goes to the phone, makes a call, and returns. Within minutes, Chase is surrounded by FBI agents. He's placed under arrest for murder. FBI interrogation room. Chase is being held until transportation to a more secure federal facility can be arranged. While being interrogated, Chase discovers that the man he thought was his future father-in-law was the former president of Cardiona. He was granted political asylum in the U.S. Tim Dirks, the FBI agent in charge. He thinks Chase will do anything for a buck. This was either a hit or a robbery that went bad. Neighbors heard gunfire and saw someone driving like mad from the estate. Security video identified Chase as that person. The interrogation is interrupted by an agent with more incriminating information. Fingerprints on several weapons at the scene matched Chase. His clothing had bloodstains. They haven't found Martinique's body yet, but they will. Chase is a killer, and as soon as Dirks finds Martinique's body, he's going to put Chase in a supermax prison for the rest of his life. Chase is put in a black SUV for transport across town by Dirks and another agent. He tries to explain about the masked men and the fingerprints, but he's confronted with more evidence of his guilt. Dirks talked to Ava. She said Chase was a stalker. She was afraid of him and had asked her father for help. Dirks also spoke with Chase's father and Eddie. They both admitted he'd been acting strange lately. Two motorcycles loudly zoom past the SUV. One of the bikers drops puncture spikes on the road. The SUV's tires burst from the spikes. It twists and slides to a stop. The second biker rolls smoking canisters under the SUV. Dirks pushes a communication radio and calls for help. A blast from the canister flips the SUV. A white van pulls up. Four masked men overpower a dazed and injured Dirks and the other agent. They grab a shaken and bruised Chase and toss them into the van. The van arrives at a waterside heliport. They take Chase to a jet-powered helicopter. Inside are the bouncer and Ava. Both are dressed in black military fatigues. Ava holds up a needle and motions for Chase's arm. It's time for a trip, Chase. FBI headquarters. Agent Dirks is getting grilled by his boss. How does something like this happen? Dirk's reply, it doesn't make sense. You want something that makes no sense? The Cardionian ambassador wants to keep this quiet until we can find Martinique's body and get Webster back. He says it would be a huge embarrassment on their country and ours if diplomats think we don't have a handle on this. Dirks confidently replies, I'll get the fixer. Chase wakes in a private jet. The monitor on the wall shows their flight path has taken them outside the U.S. heading towards Central America. While in flight, Chase learns he's involved in an unbelievable situation. Ava's father is still alive, but in hiding. The FBI must continue to believe that he's been murdered. Cardiona was taken over by a self-obsessed, brutal dictator, the General. The U.S. government knows he has his squads in the U.S. with one mission. Kill Martinique and stop any chance of his returning to power. In Martinique's absence, she and her brother Edo started a rebel army to take back the country. If they're successful, Martinique can return to power and deliver justice to the General. Chase still doesn't understand why they've turned his life upside down. Why has he been framed for murder, kidnapped, and flown to who knows where? Ava holds up a photo of her brother, Edo. It's Chase with a beard. Flashback. A fierce battle in a tropical jungle between military troops and rebel fighters. Edo is seriously wounded. A heavily bandaged Edo lying on a cot in a tent. Martinique is on a Zoom call with Ava. Ava tells him he's dying. Martinique becomes focused. This must remain our secret. No one else can know, especially the freedom fighters. The passion and fight for the rebellion is fueled by the symbol of power of you and Edo together, fighting united for Cardiona. And Ava adds, and bring our father home. Chase reluctantly acknowledges that he's been set up so well, he can't show his face anywhere on the planet. There's no way he can prove his innocence without Ava and Martinique's help. But little concerned for Chase's predicament, Ava tells him the future of a country is at stake. After her father is running the country again, they will return to America and clear Chase of all charges. Like it or not, Chase has a new job. Rebel leader. The role of leading a rebellion with Ava sounds easy to Chase. All he has to do is put on a fake beard and fatigues, make an appearance when she needs him, and stay out of the way. On their arrival to the base in Cardiona, they are treated with a hero's welcome. Edo and Ava have been to America looking for support. The bouncer's wife comes to greet him, along with a young fighter named Carlos. She touches the bouncer and motions to Edo, who's now Chase. She gives Chase her lucky coin to protect him in the battle for the children. Chase casually thanks her, but he's unable to grasp the importance of that moment. Chase settles into his new job. He's in a tent in the private and secure part of the camp. Behind his tent is another tent where Edo is being watched over by the bouncer. Chase makes a visit to see his twin. He sits next to Edo. He's alone because no one can know the secret. Chase admits to him that being alone, not in a hospital with doctors trying to save him, was a sacrifice he didn't have the strength to make. Edo's life view is simple. If anyone from the hospital is found out to be helping rebellion, they'll be killed, maybe even their families. People are suffering, and many are dying because of the general's dictatorship. If you care about your people, you find the courage to sacrifice. That's why they trust me. Trust us. My father's return is the answer. He's a symbol of what's right and just. Ava is in agony over the inevitable death of Edo. Despite this, she carries out her acting role to perfection. She's attentive to Chase in rebel gatherings and has him by her side as she leads critical strategy meetings. It's a situation that's becoming even more emotionally draining because rather than comforting her dying Edo, she has to keep her eye on Chase to make sure he doesn't screw up when he's interacting with the fighters. Chase says or does the wrong thing far too often. many of the mistakes are intentional. It's Chase, the self-centered, manipulative young man she met in L.A. Early morning. Chase is awakened by gunfire. An area of the camp is under attack by the general's forces. Ava comes to his tent and gives him an order to follow her. She takes Chase to the front lines of fighting, the trenches. Watch me. Do what I do. She goes into action. They navigate the tight trenches, pumping up the troops as Ava takes deadly aim at attackers. An explosive, wrapped in thin wire, lands in the trench in front of them. Ava picks it up and slowly untwists several wires. She throws the explosive towards the enemy troops. It explodes. She quickly turns and heads back down the trench, telling Chase, "Keep them fighting." A shot rings out. Carlos is hit. Chase is stunned as he falls to the ground, dead. With no weapons and dodging incoming fire, Chase puts on a brave face alongside the fighters until the fighting ends. Back at base camp, Ava and Chase gather the fighters to take a head count and take a moment of silence for those they lost in battle, including Carlos. The solemn moment soon turns to congratulations for their courage and willingness to fight. The gathering ends with the chant, "Edo, Ava, Edo, Ava." Chase turns and grabs Ava's hand and holds her arms high. Time together with Ava has been as intoxicating for Chase as it was when they first met. His lessons about combat and firearms, Cardiona, the cause, and Edo all occur by a creek deep in the jungle. It's a quiet spot where she and Edo planned and meditated. Chase visits his twin. Edo asks Chase to remove his beard. He takes a long look at him. They have an emotional heart-to-heart. Edo tells Chase the family's secret. Ava is not his sister. She's his wife. He points to military dog tags on the table next to him. When he was exiled overseas, living a carefree life, Ava gave the dog tags to him to remind him of his responsibility to return to Cardiona and save his people. It was a symbol for him to become a rebel leader. She knew people would never accept an outsider by his side, so she became a sister from Martinique's past. Ava searched all over Hollywood for someone who could be me, Edo tells Chase. She was ready to give up when she found you, my twin, the universe's gift to Cardiona. Edo tells Chase that his peace with his fate comes from knowing he'll help Ava finish their most important mission, freeing the children. Hundreds of children are being held by the general to keep the villagers under his thumb. The people know the general will kill. He puts a pair of twins to their death off the cliffs. Freeing the captive children before more harm can come to them will give people the courage to join the fight and take back the country. Chase starts to come around in this performance. It's hard to ignore the desperation, the need for the basics like clean water, healthcare, food, all the things he's taken for granted his whole life. He's becoming more sincere and even contributing in a positive way. One fateful evening, Ava comes to Chase and tells him, Edo has died. She leaves Chase's tent before he can respond. Chase steps outside and looks for her. She's gone. He goes to the creek. She's standing by an unmarked grave, holding Edo's dog tags in her hand. Chase tries to touch, to comfort. She waves him off. As he walks away, she tells him without turning around, he liked you. He said you could be a great band someday. I pray to the heavens he's right. Chase takes the dog tags from Ava's hand, puts them around his neck, and walks away. Chase sits quietly in his tent, playing with his Derringer knife. His emotions are mixed and confused. He decides to do what he knows he shouldn't. He removes his beard, puts on a hooded rainbreaker, and sneaks away from the camp. He walks for several miles before he grabs a ride on the back of a donkey-drawn wagon. He's dropped off at a small bar in a tiny village with a few small buildings. Chase is surprised to meet a British tourist in the bar. They share a bottle of tequila. At first, nothing but small talk, with Chase dodging questions. Later, drunk and depressed, Chase tells the Brit his story. He's probably the most wanted man on the planet, and he's fallen in love with a kick-ass woman whose heart he has no chance of ever winning. Good people are dying in the rebellion, and I haven't felt this much pain since watching my mother die in my father's arms. The tequila proves to be too much. He needs to get somewhere before he passes out. He stumbles around outside, looking for a ride. A cart pulled by a donkey comes by. The driver grabs him and pushes him on the pile of straw in the back. Out of the darkness steps Ava. She climbs in the front of the cart and sits next to the driver, the bouncer. Back at the camp, Ava helps Chase disrobe. She listens to a confused plan he's come up with to help her and Martinique. He tells her with unexpected tears how sorry he feels about Edo's death. He hopes he wasn't alone when he died, that he got to see Ava's face as he took his last breath. After getting Chase into bed, Ava strokes Edo's twin's face. She whispers in his ear, "I'm sorry about your mother." She leaves him babbling about their loss. A musical montage begins. I've got the world on top of me. Ava and Edo falling in love in Europe. They rally the fighters. Gonna fall eventually. Edo falls wounded. There's no defying gravity. But you make me feel. Chase and Ava meeting. Later in the night, two soldiers and a bouncer come into Chase's tent. They try to wake him. He thinks it's Ava. He soon realizes it's not. They take him at gunpoint to the compound of the general. The man's physical presence is both frightening and disturbing. He is a weathered, scar-faced warrior with the crazed look of a man who spent most of his life in the jungles of Cardiona. His manner is as rough as his face. As Chase is brutally interrogated about his presence in the country, a soldier shaves the general's head. As a body blow interrogation continues, the soldier touches up a tattoo. The general doesn't flinch an inch as the buzzing needle etches into his bald scalp. He tells Chase he's heard all about his involvement with Martinique's so-called rebellion. He needs him to do a little spying, passing him information about the rebels' plans. He offers Chase $1 million, a return to the States, and the end of his troubles with the FBI. Chase thinks hard. How do I know you won't kill me later? You're worth a lot more to me alive as Edo, my spy. I can't let Martinique sneak back into Cardiona and say that I killed his son and turn him into a martyr. That keeps this fight going. I want this rebellion to end now. Chase, the make-a-quick-buck guy, asks the unthinkable. What if I say no? Then I will start killing the children one by one until you say yes. Once again, Chase is snared in a Cardiona trap. The general introduces Chase to his new contact, the Brit from the bar. Thatcher Sanford, a for-hire mercenary. He has no loyalties. He has worked for the CIA, crooked dictators, even the KGB. During a walk back through the jungle to the camp, Sanford tells Chase, Martinique is no saint. He took his share of bribes and attacked people he didn't like when he was president of Cardiona. The general knows he's poison to the outside world. He's staging a rigged election to put his man as leader of the country. Business as usual, including foreign aid. Chase learns that the bouncer is in a desperate situation. His wife and kid are being held at the general's mansion. He no longer trusts that Chase the Fool can make this rebellion a success. He's doing whatever he needs to do to get his family back. When Chase gets to his tent, Ava is waiting. "Where have you been?" "Finding out information you should have told me about your father, the freedom fighter." Ava explains that life in poor countries is not always a clear line of good versus evil. Martinique is not the fully righteous man she would like for him to be, but he does much more good than bad. Many people believe in him because of the people's work he and Edo have done for Cardiona. Chase wants out. He's done. He doesn't care how. "None of this is about me, and I want out." A disappointed Ava realizes that the old Chase has returned. She asks him to be patient. Martinique has returned to Cardiona, and the attack to free the children is ready. After tomorrow night's attack, he'll be free to go. Chase takes a walk. He's surprised by the bouncer. He's forced into the jungle to the waiting Brit. Sampa tells Chase he wants to cut a deal with him. The general can't be trusted. He'll kill Martinique, you, the children, and every rebel he can find, including Ava, once he gets the information he needs from you. Sanford is also afraid the general will turn on him as well. He has a plan. Martinique is wanted by big money people he made promises to in Europe. If he can get a heads up before any attack, he can grab Martinique while everyone is distracted and fly him off to the Europeans. He has a jet waiting at the airstrip, and there's a seat on it for Chase. This plan gets Chase out of the murder mess because everyone will know Martinique is alive. Sanford also makes an offer to Chase to give him $100,000 for helping him. "The general offered me $1 million. Sanford laughs. "Try and collect on that." Sanford tells Chase he's just a bounty hunter. Money is all he cares about. He gets paid for turning in Martinique, not a penny more for turning in Chase or Ava. Chase asks the question, "What happens with the rebellion?" Sanford's reply, "In a rebellion, people die. Do you want to be one of them?" "I mean the children." With Martinique out of the way, he'll probably let them go. Chase decides to take the deal, and he tells them the details of Ava and Martinique's plan to attack the general's compound tomorrow night. Ava arrives at a meeting where Martinique is going over attack details with the fighters. The bouncer is standing by Martinique's side. Ava confides to Martinique that Chase may not hold the secret much longer. Martinique tells her the plans have changed. They attack tonight. He made the change because he heard in Ava's voice too much trust in Chase, a man out for himself. She's hurt, but she understands. They gather their weapons and head for the general's compound. The bouncer slips off into the village where Chase and Sanford are drinking at the bar. He tells them the attack is tonight. Sanford makes a call. He asks Chase if he could go with him to the airport. Chase is reluctant. He tells Chase he'll take him to the jet to wait, where he'll be safe while he grabs Martinique. A military jeep traveling the narrow jungle roads on the way to the airstrip. Sanford and Chase are inside. They arrive at the airstrip. An unmarked, shiny black jet is waiting. Surprise! Sanford pulls a gun on Chase. He makes him get out of the jeep. He ties his hands together. Chase is forced to lie on the floor in the back of the jeep. He ties his ankles. Sanford walks to the jet. He knocks on the door. It opens. A familiar face is in the doorway. FBI agent Tim Dirks. "I've got our package," Sanford boasts. Dirks tosses him a bag. Sanford opens it. It's filled with $100 bills. Chase needs to escape. He pulls his legs up to his arms. He turns his body hard to open a small pocket on his fatigue pants. The Derringer knife that Ava gave him as a souvenir is inside. He cuts the zip ties that binds his hands and legs. Sanford comes back to the jeep. He reaches to pull Chase out. Chase kicks Sanford forcefully to the ground. He grabs Sanford's gun and places it against his head before Dirks and his FBI partner can draw their weapons, a move Ava taught him. He forces the group to disrobe. The pilot inside the jet is watching the action through his window. He sneaks to the plane's door to close it. Chase sees him, and he tells him if he does it, they'll all be dead. He makes the pilot come out of the plane and help him tie the hands of the men sitting on the dusty airstrip without their clothes. He takes their clothes and the money and leads the pilot, at gunpoint, back to the plane. Loud explosions and gunfire begin in the distance, near the general's compound. Standing in the open door of the jet, Chase takes off his battle fatigue top and throws it to the ground. He pulls the dog tags off, and he starts to throw them as well, but he changes his mind. He puts them in his pocket. Mortar fire lights up the night sky. Chase forces the pilot to close the door and instructs him to taxi the jet towards the runway. He tosses the bag of money in a seat. He sits and he tries to get comfortable. There's a folder on the seat across the aisle. He opens it. A photo of Chase in his aviator glasses, without his beard, is inside. "Where are we going?" The question from the pilot. "Just get me in this guy." The dog tags in his pocket are poking him. He takes them out. Flashback. Chase, standing with Ava at Edo's grave. She gives him the dog tags and says Edo thought he would be a great man someday. Screen wipe. The bouncer's wife, with Carlos standing next to her. She's giving him the lucky coin. The thrust from the engines of the taxiing plane pushes against Stanford, Dirks, and the agent, rolling them around in the dirt and dusk of the airstrip. The jet lurches forward. Suddenly, the engines power down. The door opens. Chase jumps the full length of the steps to the ground. He takes Stanford's Jeep and starts it. He pauses. He runs back into the jet. Moments later, he runs down the stairs with a bag of money and the dog tags in his hand. He drives full speed, heading towards the fighting. After he's gone, the pilot exits the plane and cuts Stanford, Dirks, and the agents free. Chase arrives at the general's compound. Blazing battles of deadly gunfire and explosions are all around. He spots Ava. She's pinned down near the front gate. Martinique and his group of fighters have made their way to the front door of the general's mansion. Chase drives to Ava. They both take cover on the side of the jeep as they exchange gunfire with the soldiers across the courtyard. "Where have you been?" He tells her about the general's plans to force Martinique to surrender. If he doesn't, he'll blow up the warehouse with the children in it. "How do you know this?" "He told me. I made a bad mistake. I told someone who I was, and they told the general. He grabbed me and he told me he would kill the children one at a time until I told him their attack plans. I know you'll never forgive me. I wouldn't." Suddenly, Samper's behind him. He grabs Ava. She makes a swift martial art kick and he's disarmed. She grabs him by the collar and uses him as a shield. They run towards a large warehouse in the back edge of the estate. Martinique and his troops fight their way into the general's mansion. The bouncer is fighting alongside Martinique. He turns and is about to confess when Martinique stops him. "I would have done the same thing to save my family." Martinique becomes a one-man army, fighting his way through the rooms in the mansion looking for the general. The general uses his troops for a shield and escapes. Ava and Chase watch as Martinique chases the general into the jungle. Several of the general's troops are right behind them. Chase turns and gets a nod from Ava. "What about the children? I want to help." In classic Ava style, "I got this." Chase runs off to help Martinique. Ava guides the freedom fighters as they fight their way towards the warehouse. The bouncer searches the mansion and locates his wife and child and rescues them. The general is running through the jungle with Martinique in pursuit. Martinique outmaneuvers the general and they confront each other. The general holds up a remote detonator. Martinique makes a step towards him and the general activates it. He threatens to blow the children to pieces. Ava and her fighters make it to the warehouse. They find explosive charges all around the building. A blinking detonator receiver is on the door. The general's troops arrive. Chase is right behind them. Chase fires at the troops and then fires off a shot at the general. He dodges Chase's gunfire. As he does, Martinique slaps away the detonator. A fast and furious one-on-one battle begins between Martinique and the general as a gun battle rages between Chase and his troops. The marksmanship he learned from Ava is clearly on display as he kills them all, one by one. The general gets the upper hand in his fight with Martinique. As Chase guns down the last soldier, he comes to help. The general uses Martinique as a shield with a gun to his head. Chase can only watch as the general lectures Martinique about representing only the rich and the privileged. "I'm proud to be a dictator," says the general. "The rich and the poor serve me and suffer together." Chase begins to circle them, looking for a clean shot. The general continues to keep Martinique between them. Chase's movement gets him near the detonator, and he picks it up. Martinique calls the general's ideas lies he invented to ease his guilt for the pain he's causing. This enrages the general. He shoves Martinique towards Chase and fires his gun. Martinique falls, seriously wounded. His next shot is at Chase. He ducks for cover. The general walks to Martinique, prepared to fire again. He sees Chase is about to shoot. Chase's shot strikes the general in the shoulder. The shot should have dropped him to his knees, but instead, he's charging like a massive wounded beast. That was the last bullet in Chase's gun. He throws the detonator far into the jungle. This distracts the general just enough for him to take off and run. The general's pursuit of Chase is unrelenting. He barely avoids shot after shot, overlooking a rocky shoreline. The general slowly walks towards him. Joining Edo, his twin, seems imminent. The warehouse entrance. Ava continues to keep Samson in front of her as she approaches. Shots ring out from a sniper on the roof. Samson falls. Ava fires back, taking out the sniper. She goes to the large door of the warehouse. The handles are wrapped in wire that lead to two explosive devices. She looks inside between the cracks in the doors. She sees hundreds of children huddled together in groups and frightened. Her fighters are able to finish off the last of the general's troops. His reinforcements are on the way. They have to hurry. She slowly unwraps the wire from the handle. She unwinds the two explosive tubes attached to the door. The tubes fall to the ground and roll in opposite directions. She grabs the first one and hurdles it into the bush. She dives to the ground to get the second one. The first device explodes. The shock of the blast pushes the second tube out of her reach. She does a rolling flip, grabbing the tube between her feet. She continues her roll, flinging the explosive tube high and far. It explodes. Fighters are knocked to the ground, but there are no serious injuries. Ava walks to the large warehouse doors. She pulls them open. A warehouse filled with relieved village children rush towards her. At the cliff's edge, the general raises his pistol and taunts Chase. "Tell me, what's in your head? Beg for your life? Or are you ready to take a bullet like your twin Edo?" Looking straight down the barrel of the gun, Chase responds, "I'll never give you the satisfaction of knowing." Chase lurches for the gun in his face. A shot rings out. After an endless moment, the general falls forward and over the cliff. After he falls, Chase sees Ava holding a smoking revolver. Ava and Chase walk away from the cliffs and embrace. Shots ring out. Chase and Ava are hit. A bloody and disfigured Samford is the shooter. As the pair lay on the ground, Samford approaches to check his kill. He stands over a motionless Ava, prepared to fire again. Flashback. A 15-year-old Chase watching his mother die in his father's arms. In a weak voice, he pleads with Samford for Ava's life. He tells him she told him about tons of gold hidden on the estate, and he can have it. He motions for Samford to come closer. Samford leans down, putting his ear near Chase's mouth. Chase grabs Samford and pulls him down on top of him. A look of surprise flashes across Samford's face. The surprise turns to pain. Then death. Sanford rolls off Chase to the ground, covered in blood. The blade of the small Derringer knife is sticking in Sanford's heart. Chase slowly and painfully moves to check on a wounded and unconscious Ava. Celebration time in Cardiona. There's a large crowd in the main government square. Three large silk-covered triangles are on the wall of the main building's entranceway. Beneath them are bandaged heroes, Martinique, Ava, and in a wheelchair, Chase dressed as Edo. Ava helps Chase pull a cord on the first rectangle. A painting is revealed. It's a portrait of Edo. Ava pulls the cord, unveiling the painting to the right. It's a painting of her. Martinique walks into frame as we wait for the final unveiling. He pulls the cord. It's him as president, standing triumphantly. People gather around to take pictures with the three standing together. At Cardiona Beach. It's empty except for Chase in his aviator glasses without the beard and Ava wearing a large hat and sunglasses. Chase is finishing a FaceTime call with Eddie, his dad, and Neville. They find his story crazy, but typical Chase. He'll tell them all the details when he gets home. Chase turns his attention to the future and Cardiona. Ava tells him that Martinique will tell his people after the right amount of time. Edo died from his wounds in his battle with the general. Chase is about to ask Ava about their future when they are interrupted by FBI agent Dirks on a beach run. Dirks wants Chase to wait in Cardiona until he can clear things up. It's a pretty complicated situation. They'll all return to the U.S., and if anything goes wrong, they'll use Martinique's diplomatic immunity to clean things up. Chase points out that he has an added bargaining chip to make sure things go smoothly. What if word leaked out that the U.S. government cut a deal with a part-time KGB agent and an international assassin named Sanford? It would be very embarrassing for Dirk's boss. Ava and Dirk shake their heads. Chase forever the dealmaker. Dirks asks Chase, whatever happened to that big bag of cash you took? Ava looks at him and tells him that it's going to good use. An aerial shot of the large crowd at Government Square. People are enjoying food trucks, trying on clothes at a new market, and children are being given toys by the bouncer and the freedom fighters. This presentation is a production of AJE3 Entertainment. Copyright 2020. All rights reserved. Audio imagery. Storytelling reimagined.